Okay, next week we're going to do John 5. And what I want you to pay attention to is there's a story that goes at Bethsaida that an angel came, and when he stirred up the waters, whoever got into it first was healed. So what we want to do is, if that story's true, what kind of God is that? So we're going to explore that next week. This week we're going to finish up John 4. Remember last week we finished up with a woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, how she went to her village, being a woman of ill repute most likely, not thought of very well, kind of an outcast, and yet her witness was strong enough that they came out, met Jesus, and invited Him to come back to their village, and He spent 2 days with them. And when they left, they said to Jesus, "You are the Savior of the world." Very, very powerful. Leroy brought that to my attention last week, that perhaps that's the only time in the Gospels, maybe outside the Roman centurion, that that was said. So here He's talked to some people who despised Jews, didn't like them, had nothing in common, and in 2 days they recognized who He was. Let's pick up this week. Well, first of all, I want to do a little reviewing. We have some new people here. John is considered by most theologians as the most precious book of the four Gospels. When we read Matthew, who remembers what the author of Matthew's profession was? Tax collector, man that liked numbers, man that worked with numbers. So the first thing Matthew does is he writes and has all the genealogy, all the begats, because obviously this would appeal to him. Now you can imagine a Gentile reading the book of Matthew. Well, I mean, he's bored right off the bat because none of this has any of his ancestors in there. So why would he care who came from what? Mark was writing a book that was mainly to the people in Rome that faced death. And so Mark's book has Jesus just hopping. The biggest word in Mark is immediately. And immediately Jesus went here, and immediately Jesus did this, and immediately. So he's just moving at a very fast pace. Why would he do that?
Because they didn't have long to live.
The letter he was writing, they didn't have long to live, so he couldn't write them a nice long letter. They might not be around for the finish of it. So he's just very quick pace. Luke, being a doctor, saw Jesus as a servant of man. So we get my favorite parable, prodigal son, but we see lots of parables, the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son. And so all through Luke, he portrays Jesus as a servant of man, one who's come down to save and to serve humanity. John, he wrote his book, the last of the four. He wrote this in about AD 90, so it's really one of the last books of the New Testament. John had an opportunity to sit down and look over everything that had been written. And so his book, he had a chance to pick out what he thought, on hindsight, what was important about Christ's life. We see nothing about genealogy. We see nothing about the birth. We have no parables. We see no healing of demonic or evil spirits. We have nothing of the ascension. And so he leaves out a lot of stuff. But he wrote what most theologians feel is the most precious book about Jesus himself. And so that's why we chose at this time to study John. So keep that in mind in the next few weeks. This was something that John picked through inspiration, what he thought was most important, not only to the Jews, but to the Gentile world. And this is why we see Jesus portrayed. Let's pick up with verse 43 of chapter 4, if you turn your Bibles. Now remember, he talked to the Samaritan woman, the woman at the well. And then we see, if I can get over here, verse 43. It says, "After 2 days, he went forth from there into Galilee. For Jesus himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. He went right by Nazareth and never stopped, his hometown. Why do you think he did that? Why don't you think he would stop and, quote, go home?
Just like he said, nobody would pay attention to him. Okay. They knew him as a little carpenter.
He had... Nobody there would have really accepted him. Why do you think that's so? What happens when you go to reunions? What do people remember?
What you used to be.
Yeah, what else? They tend to remember the good or the bad?
Bad?
Bad? Yeah, they remember the crazy things, the stupid things. Except for me. They remember the good things I did. But you know what I mean? It tends to be that way. And so what do you think when Jesus came and if he went back to his hometown and announced that he was the Messiah, what do you think most of those people would have said to him? Yeah.
Nothing important about you. You didn't do anything. Yeah.
People who know a lot about you tend to remember what's bad or some of the things that's not most popular. Have a real good friend that's on 3ABN. And it's surprising. I've only known him for 40 years. Charles knows him very well. It's surprisingly... when I met with him a couple of weeks, how people tend to remember some of the crazy things that we all do. Is that good or bad?
I think it can be a good thing.
And would you explain that thinking, please?
For example, high school reunion. Those are always great after 10 years. I know it might be longer for some of you in the room, but...
No, that guy's a salesman.
But our stories were like, you remember that time you did this to the teacher and you stuck the ink in under the seat and he sat on his ink or whatever. It was the crazy, funny stories. But we see where we're at now, how far we've come, how far we've matured, if we've grown in Christ. We can tell that we're not that same person. We can still laugh about it because we all, you know, grew up together and knew each other in high school and know that it was all in fun and games or whatever the case may be. But, you know, 10 years later down the road, we're still friends and can see where we've moved in life. That's why I think maybe it's a good thing. We have that bond, the thing that connects us.
Mm-hmm.
The stories that we share.
Very good. The most powerful testimony we can ever give is... You know what I was like, I've met Jesus, and this is what I'm like now. So sometimes we can use to our advantage if it's brought up. Because that's going to happen. Whenever you put out your name that you're a Christian or you're a follower of Christ, people will bring up, well, I remember this, and can't get away from that. But all you can say is, yes, that was true, but I'm walking with God and you can see the change in my life. But this particular time, early in his ministry, Jesus chose not to go to Nazareth. As we read down the line, he did go to Nazareth, and was that, as anybody remember, was that good or bad? It was horrendous. So, for some reason, a prophet's not accepted in his own country. But Jesus bypassed it very early in his career, and he goes to Galilee. Now let's get into our lesson tonight. Somebody read verse 46, please. And I'm such a good mood, I don't even care what version.
Once again, he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine. An officer of the royal service was there whose son was lying ill at Capernaum.
Okay, let's stop there. He goes to Cana where he had done his first miracle, turning water into wine. That's in the first chapter of John, second chapter. And somehow, Capernaum is about 20 miles away. Somehow a royal officer or a subject, most likely we think this was a courier of King Herod. Pretty powerful guy. And somehow he's heard that Jesus is in Cana. And so he comes from Capernaum, who, and his son was very, very sick, near death. Somebody read verse 47.
When he heard that Jesus had come out of Judea into Galilee, he went to him and was requesting him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death.
Okay. Now let's start analyzing this a little bit. Just let it ring. Next time, turn it off, please. Let's start analyzing this for a second. This was a man that had high position in the government. He hears about Jesus, and his son is dying, so he travels 20 miles to have an audience with Jesus. Here is a very good question. What do you think when he saw Jesus, what went through his mind?
Probably, here's the man that I've come to see that can heal my son.
Okay. One option?
I don't know if maybe he felt hope that he's, you know, however long he's been dealing with his son's illness, that might have been the first thing. There is
okay. Second option?
He's expecting more, maybe? Somebody grander?
Third option? Any other insight?
He's kind of impatient. Kind of like, probably, this has to get done real quick before the kid dies.
Okay.
Kind of
we're going to come to that one in a second. What do you think Jesus looked like to him when he saw him?
Probably just an ordinary person with a lot of people gathered around him that set him apart from all the rest of them.
Desire of Ages says that he was, paraphrasing, shocked and disappointed when he first laid his eyes upon Jesus. Now here's his son sick. His son is dying. Somehow he's heard of a man that performed miracles. And he comes to Cana. What do you think a miracle worker would look like?
Wizard.
Pardon?
A wizard, magician like
he
said.
Well, wizard, magician?
Today it would be flamboyant.
Flamboyant, nice clothes, able to hold an audience. And here he comes and he sees this lowly carpenter. And his heart just kind of fluttered. Remember, when he saw who Jesus looked like, the first thing he had to do was to swallow his pride. He was somebody in the government. He had to swallow his pride. He, a nobleman, a courier, a high official, had to walk up to this lowly-looking carpenter. And that was the first thing that went through his mind. Was, how can this be the man? When he heard that Jesus had come out of Judea into Galilee, he went to him and was imploring him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death. How do you think he asked that? Pardon?
Begging.
Now, this is where we lose some in the English and the Greek. The Greek for this word is imploring, is begging and keep on begging. He was pleading. Pleading to this man to heal his son. Now, question is, he said, will you come down and heal my son? Does anybody see any insight into that phrase?
It was important to him, or he did get down there and do it before he died, it seems to me. If there was some, like your question, that if he died, he wasn't going to be able to heal him. Certainly not to bring him back to life.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was something.
So you're saying, John, that that you think that he felt if Jesus could be there in the presence of that boy, that there was a chance.
Yeah, before he died.
Before he died, yeah. Okay.
He messed around and waited after he died. It appears that he wasn't so sure if God could do it, Jesus could do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Okay. Yes.
Doesn't sound like there's any doubt that he had that Jesus couldn't do it. He just says, come and do it. He didn't say, can you heal my son or anything like that. He just says, come and do it.
Okay.
So he must have had a lot of faith.
He had some faith. But his faith was dependent on if God could get there in front, or Jesus could get there in front of that son. Okay. Can you think of anybody else that had that same belief when it came to healing? Yeah, let's turn to John 11, I think 21, and I think 32. Who has 21? Read away, whoever gets there first.
Martha then said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.
Okay. And 32.
When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.
Okay. Same exact scenario as the nobleman. Lord, if you would have been here, this would not have happened. The nobleman comes to Jesus and says, if we can get home, I know that you can heal my son. So John, you're exactly correct. In his mind, Jesus needed to be there. In Mary's mind and in Martha's mind, Jesus needed to be there before it happened. Now, we say the nobleman had a lot of faith. We say Mary and Martha had, quote, a lot of faith. How much faith did they have? They had some, but not fully understanding.
Don't you think faith is a good example of faith that's based on substance, on evidence? They hadn't had too much experience with Christ raising somebody from the dead.
Absolutely.
They observed the healing part of it, and
yep.
So they could trust that he could do that.
Yeah.
The other thing they hadn't seen happen.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So God never asks us to have faith in something that we have no concept can happen or not happen. Those that say that faith is something believing that you don't know, that's not true. Faith has always been built on trust. In fact, the word for faith, the best word you can just, every time you see faith, throw it out and just write in trust, and you'll never get in trouble. So the nobleman, he knew one thing, if Jesus could get there in front of that boy, he would live. But that's as far as his faith and trust went. Now, am I correct that when he said that, Jesus said, well, you tell me, what did he say?
Unless you people see miracles, miraculous signs and wonders, Jesus told him, you will never believe.
Why in the world would he give this answer? Now just stop and think. Here's a nobleman. He's humbled himself. He comes. He begs and begs and begs and keeps on begging. Lord, my son is dying. If you can just get there. And Jesus says, unless you people see signs and wonders, you simply will not believe. What kind of answer is that?
Sounds like one out of frustration.
Mm-hmm. Annoying.
So Jesus is frustrated and annoying.
What?
Frustrated and annoying. What kind of answer is this?
I see the contrast from the city that he just left. Just 2 days he spent there is all he ever had. And the people, when they left, when he left, he says, it is no longer because of what you, the woman, had said, for we have heard him ourselves. Now in Galilee, the only people, they hadn't listened to him in anything. The only thing they knew about it was the miracles. And anybody will follow somebody that does all of the physical aspects, the gimmies, passing out the dollar bills. Boy, the gimmies, I'll take that. I don't want to listen to what you say. Just give me the gimmies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the first time Jesus is trying to get across to the people that now you've just been seeing the gimmies. And you won't listen to anything until you see the gimmies. But he's fixing to change that.
Okay. Very good. What insights you all have? What kind of answer is that? Sir, my son is dying. Please, please, please come and take care of that problem. Well, all you're concerned about is seeing signs and wonders.
I think he might have said that more for the other people who were around.
Okay.
They have no experience with long-distance healing.
Okay. Okay.
Your son's dying. What else is on your mind?
Correct.
I think he's just trying to get him to think a different way. Even if I'm not here, you can still ask and I can still provide. I think he's just trying to make him think. Because everyone thought you had to be here to heal. Now this is where he's trying to bring, hey, I don't have to be there. I can be asking. I'm everywhere. You know, this is how it's going to be.
Okay. What do you think went through the nobleman's mind when this was said to him?
If I was being him, I'd have probably been confused. Didn't seem like it fit the picture.
Okay. What did the nobleman's son want? Pardon?
You said the son?
What did the nobleman, what did he want?
His son to live.
Was that chief on his mind?
Yes.
Was that the only thing on his mind?
It appears so.
What is always on your father's mind about you?
Do whatever he can to restore you.
Yes. God is always working, not always, God is working on a different level many times than what we're working on. The nobleman was interested in what all of us would have been interested in. Come down and heal my son. He had nothing to lose. He had some reason to think that this man could do it. When he saw him, he was utterly disappointed on what he was looking at. But he had just come 20 miles. So Jesus says what he's interested in. He's speaking to that man's heart. Unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe. Have a good friend, Mr. Jim Quinn. For years, he's told me that he's been praying to saying, God, if you are real, show me a miracle. For years. Now, how many miracles do you think God showed him during that period? How many miracles do you think Mr. Quinn recognized during that period? Zero. God, if you'll only show me a miracle, I'll believe in you. And he got zero big miracles. Now he works for 3ABN. He's on the pastoral line. He answers the phones. And he shared with me just 2 days ago, because we was talking about this on a different deal, but it came up, I see miracles every day. Do you see when you sit there and you say, God, just show me a miracle and I believe, that's not enough. Proof is the Sadducees never believed in a resurrection. Why did Jesus, we'll get this to 11, but I'll give you a proof. Why did Jesus wait 3 days, 4 days before he went down and resurrected Lazarus?
The Pharisees would be sure he was dead.
Pharisees and the Sadducees, his last appeal to them. Remember, he's getting ready to go to Calvary. His last appeal to them was when he said, Lazarus, come forth, and he stunk. They had a belief after 3 days your spirit went somewhere. That's why he waited. They had no excuse. And don't you think that when Lazarus came forth, it should have been, my goodness, you are the Messiah. You are the creator of the universe. You are God. And what did they say? Let's kill him. So God does not answer that kind of prayer. It does no good. If he'd have shown Mr. Quinn one miracle, what do you think would have happened? Same thing as Gideon said, hey, that's kind of interesting. Now let's see, let's reverse it and see if it goes the other way. That's what Jesus was saying to this man. Look, if you're just here to get a miracle, it's not going to do you any good. Because Jesus is interested in his eternal salvation. He's always interested in our eternal salvation. So he gives a very flippant, bleak, non-hopeful answer. Now, what does the nobleman do with this? Somebody read the next verse.
The officer pleaded with him, sir, come down before my son dies.
Yes. The Greek says this was with an urgent pleading. Did Jesus get the response he wanted from this man? Okay. Then why did he say, "Your son lives"? What's in this change, this discourse? He gives him a bleak answer. Again, he comes back with the same plea, "Sir, come down, come quickly, come urgently." And Jesus said to him, "Go, your son lives." What happened in that period? In those few sentences. Yes?
I think the guy probably felt kind of stupid when he left. Like, okay, I'm allowed to leave. When I get there, my son's going to be healed. I didn't get to witness it. I didn't even have to come 20 miles. Jesus never even had to come to the house. The miracle happened probably just then, right then and there. And then when he got home, he had to realize that a lot of the stuff that he was hoping to see, he didn't really need to see to believe.
Okay. Would you have left? James, do me a favor.
Sure.
Pick that phone up and hand it to Sue, please. Don't answer it. Just pick it up and hand it to her.
Thank you. I should have done it the first time.
I don't care who it is. Just turn it off, please, ma'am.
I will it, but I have to wait for it to quit ringing.
Thank you.
I think we see another parallel between here and the people of Samaria.
Okay. Would you have left, is the question.
It depends on whether you really were focused on believing him. Because he said, my version, "You may go, your mm-hmm. son will live."
Mm-hmm.
And he believed that and immediately mm-hmm. left.
Okay. Would you have left?
Yeah, but I don't know if I would have immediately believed that when I got home my son I would have just said, "I don't know what who I just saw. I was wrong." And the minute I walked in and saw that it was just a carpenter, so I still would not have faith until I got home and saw my child healed.
If you didn't have faith, you think the child would have been healed?
Jesus said he was.
Jesus might have for the son's sake, but for his sake, he wouldn't have healed him because he knows that that wouldn't be.
Would you have left?
Believing as I do today, I would have.
Yes.
It was kind of the same thing as when he got there and saw him and still begged. You know, it's like at that point, what did he have to lose?
Okay.
I think he believed, and I think that Jesus knew that, knew his heart.
Did he see Jesus different when he asked this time for healing than he just did previously when he asked for healing for his son?
He was to Jesus' preaching and things that he was doing at the time. All we have is just the recorded word here of what transpired.
He started out by saying, "Will you come down?" Jesus says, "Unless I give you signs and wonders, you'll never believe." He comes right back and says, "Sir, there's an urgency in this. There's an urgency. Come down and heal my boy." And Jesus says, "Go on your way. Your son will live." And he left. Would you have left?
Well, it depends on how he said it. I mean, in this, he says, "You may go. Your son will live." if somebody tells me you may go, I'm kind of going to feel uncomfortable about trying to stay. I bet I'd be like, well, hey, can I please stay, obviously, or something I don't know. You know, something I'm lost somewhere. Would you please let me stay?
What is he going to stay for? I'm missing some verdict you're trying to get.
Okay.
Why is he going to stay? What is the...
My point is, do you believe there was any doubt in that man's mind that his son was saved, was healed?
No.
I don't think so.
No doubt. He knew it.
We went from asking Christ to come to accepting that Christ wasn't going to come, his son was going to be healed anyway.
Okay. And what changed? Something had to change. This was not, I don't believe this was a hope and a prayer. If I thought this man had the cure to save my son, I would not, I believe, walk away without the assurance that my son would live. You've been there, John. You would not walk away. He walked away.
I believe he came with a preconceived idea that Jesus had to be physically present. But when he changed that preconceived idea to a reality...
And what changed that?
That he believed what Jesus had told him. Just like the people of Samaria, I have heard from his mouth, and I believe him. So when he heard Jesus, he says, your son lived. He believed it.
Okay. And what changed that belief? He came there saying, we all agree, if you can just come, my son will live. And he walked away believing that his son would live. What changed? Let's go back. Why did Jesus say what he said? Because the only... not very good in English, so whatever that thing from leads from one sentence to another, it's a connector. Just the only connector in this dialogue is the question that Jesus asked.
I think that he's talking to them saying, I know what it's going to take for you to believe, and that's done. That is that you see a sign or a miracle. And that's... I know it says you people... He's part of that crowd, and I'm wondering the assurance he gathered from that statement, because as you said, that's the only connecting thing that we have here between the two questions, come down, unless you see a miracle, come down again. Christ must have said, I'm going to show you a miracle. I mean, in order for you to believe, it's going to take a miracle, and your son is going to be healed. Go your way. He'll be healed. And I think that's when the father knew, I'm going to go home and see my son alive, because Christ knows what it takes for me personally to believe.
Okay. Any other insights? How do you put this in your own life? You ever ask for something from God? Not get it? Justin, you have your hand up.
I was just going to say, could be off base here, but sometimes it's not always going to be a miraculous sign. It could still be a sign, but it could be a subtle sign. Sometimes it may not be exactly what we're thinking or what we want. Like, what if the kid had died? You know, Jesus was saying you can still believe, you know, and you always have to believe eternally. You know, he had to believe that the son really was not dead, and that there was eternal life, actually. And that just because you saw a mortal die, that that doesn't mean that person was dead. And then
okay.
Finally realized that it's all about believing, and he could have done that 20 minutes away back in his house. We don't have to see big, miraculous things in our life.
Mm-hmm.
happen. Sometimes they're just happening subtly in a way that we don't know. Like you said, it works on different levels.
Okay. Think Jesus was planting any kind of seed?
I think he was. He just got through asking, or just telling the people, will any of you believe without seeing? He tells this guy that, go away, your son lives. Well, that immediately says, well, here's a man that is going to believe without seeing, because his son's 20 miles away.
Okay.
Because the very next sentence says, the man believed and he started for home.
See, I believe that the man come to Christ not really caring particularly who he was. He was looking for power, for someone to take care of his son. He says, just come on down. If you can get in front of him, you'll heal him. Jesus said to him, unless you have signs or wonders, you will not believe. Somewhere in that sentence, he touched that man's heart. Because the man did come with a very selfish motive. Why wouldn't he come with one? That's natural. But Jesus is trying to say to him, there's something different here. And the man came right back and asked a question we would all ask. Will you come down? Will you come in person? And then when Jesus looked at him and said, your son lives, we see no more argument. The reason I ask, what would you do? I think that depends upon what is your relationship with God. If there wasn't something that Christ touched his heart, I believe he would have stood there and still pleaded. Because he had, as John brought, he had no reason to believe that Jesus could heal him. Especially if he was near death. But he turns around and he leaves. Do you think he ran home? Took him a while to get there. We see no sense of urgency for him to go home. And part way, here comes some say servant, another one says slave. Somebody read us verse 51.
As he was now going down, his slaves met him, saying that his son was living. So he inquired of them the hour when he began to get better.
Why did he do that for?
To validate.
Pardon?
That was his evidence.
Yeah. But I thought we were supposed to trust God with a blind faith.
But that would be an affirmation.
Okay. Anything wrong with them in doing that?
I don't think so.
Sandy?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong at all with that. I think he knew when it was that he said.
Yeah. But God invites us to test him. God invites us to put him to the test, to find affirmation, to find things. This is a relationship. This is how you work a relationship. You ask questions and you get answers. Read on, John, doing good.
They said therefore to him, yesterday at the seventh hour the fever left him. So the father knew that it was at that hour in which Jesus said to him, your son lives. And he himself believed in his whole household.
Okay. What does that mean? He goes and he asks for the hour, gets affirmation, confirmation, exact hour, and then it says him and his whole household. Why would John throw that into the story?
Those are the people.
Pardon?
Because those are the people that only believe. This says, unless you people see miraculous signs, I don't know if he's categorizing their family or their for these all these people, they just need to see things. And they need evidence, like we were saying.
And they were under his influence. They were in his circle of influence.
Mm-hmm.
This important official became not only an important official, but he became a servant at that time.
Jesus is not an answer man. I don't know if he was in Sabbath school a few weeks ago. Somebody was kind of giving me a hard time on Abraham. And finally I said that God is not Santa Claus. God just does not make everything fall right into place. Here was a man that had enough faith to come 20 miles. He looked at a person and saw he was a lowly carpenter and his heart fell. But he still had enough faith, whether it was what do I have to lose, or I still think this guy might be of some help, don't know. But he still had enough to say, if you can just get in front of my son, you will live.
Where does it say that his heart failed?
Desire of Ages. He humbled and swallowed pride and asked, and Jesus gave him one of the bleakest answers he could give a person. But somewhere in that answer, the man caught a glimpse of the message of who this man was. And it was enough for him to go back home. Desire of Ages says he didn't hurry. He had the assurance that his prayer was answered. And that's why that question has to have importance, because it changed. And he went home, and it was enough for his whole household. Not only him, but his household. Now, question is, John, remember, he could pick all the stories he wanted to. That was his privilege of writing this book. What relevance does this have to our life today? Because otherwise, the story becomes just a very interesting story. So how do we apply this to our lives today?
I mean, when it says they believe, what are we supposed to get from that? Did they believe what? Did Christ have the power to do what he said that he had done? Or is there something beyond that that he's trying to show them? I know in other places he drives a lesson that if I have the power to raise someone from the dead, it's not so far on them to believe that I have the power to forgive sin. In fact, that's the route that he went with most of the people, because they thought that this bad thing had happened to them. It happened because of their sinful life. And so he would take care of that problem first.
Mm-hmm.
The healing then came after that. But I think deep down that Christ was there to try. His heart went out to the people to heal the problem. The forgiveness, he was forgiveness personified. So I don't think that was what needed to happen first for him to be able to heal them. But I'm not sure that when it says, then they believed what? That he was the Messiah and all this stuff? Here they were maybe heathen and didn't even know that there was such a thing as a Messiah.
Okay. It's a good question.
In that class with Pastor Gill, we studied John, and she was saying that thought the main point of John was, or every story he's telling is to prove that he's the Messiah. Like that was the theme throughout.
Okay. How does this relate to you? What do you get out of this story? Yes. Speak up. Don't raise your hand. Speak up.
It's kind of like the mustard seed of faith. We have the faith of the mustard seed. We can move mountains. And, you know, he didn't have the faith, but yet he was ended up a tremendous witness to his family.
Okay. What other things do you get out of this? How does this story relate to you? Yes?
Well, I know one thing. We can't physically, in this day and age, watch Jesus perform miracles, so we probably won't see too many all-out major miracles, although, like I said, we all have subtle miracles in our own lives that only we recognize as that definitely is God. But that's where it needs to... You know, we just need to think about that, because... We need to believe regardless of what evidence it is.
Okay. What other things? What else? How does this relate to you? Scale of 1 to 10, how much, quote, faith do you think this... Nobleman had on in Jesus when he first came?
Not much, because he didn't have too much evidence. He made in his own life. You say
five? Maybe.
Five? I think that's probably very generous.
I don't know. He walked 20 miles. He walked 20 miles. He's going to have some faith that something's going to happen.
Son died, what did he have to lose?
We don't know the background. I don't know if he had heard Christ before, if this was his first encounter with him.
It's pretty early in his ministry. We would say this was probably first month of his ministry.
Somebody had to tell him something. I mean, he didn't just get up and start walking towards the east and hope that he would... He had to know there was some guy out there healing.
Is it possible that he could have been in the wedding party where Christ was in the same area?
Could have been. Being a courier, he probably wouldn't have been invited to a Jew wedding. But it could have been. So what was the first thing the man did that was important?
Humbled himself.
Even before he humbled himself, because he went there with the desire of ages with a certain kind of a concept of what Jesus was like. He probably thought he was going to be talking to an equal. What did he do before that? Why did he walk 20 miles for?
For healing for himself.
And how was he going to do that? I'm looking for a three-letter word. What did he have to do?
Seek him out.
Three letter word. Starts with A.
Ask.
Ask. Ask. Now, we kind of smile about that. But I'm going to give you a quote from Desire of Ages. Paraphrasing. I'm a great paraphraser. God has many blessings that He would like to bestow in your life if you would only ask. And how we forget that. So the very first thing that's important in this story in our life is to ask. It's interesting. Jeff Pruitt, some of you have heard me talk about him. I hadn't even told you this. I had lunch with him the other day. I never eat by myself at lunch if I can help it. Last resort, Sue. But if I can find anybody that will be dumb enough to eat lunch with me, we're going to eat lunch. I've been all that way 30 years. He went to Florida. And he went to his storage room and got a bunch of his old stuff out. And he said one of the things he found was a letter that he was 19 years old, in jail for going AOOL in the military in Hawaii. And that's where he found God. And he said, I read my prayer list for a wife. And he said, I wanted, on my prayer list I had, that I wanted her to be pretty, wanted her to have dark hair, wanted her to have good teeth.
No dental bills.
And several other attributes. Now this is absolutely amazing because Gretchen, his wife, fits that bill. Now here's a boy, do nothing about God, per se. Went AOOL, he's thrown in military prison in Hawaii. They give him a New Testament, and it changes his life. And he had his prayer list. And so this is what he prayed. He got married when he was about 25. Because he would date girls, and they just... Do you see what I'm saying? Coincidence? I don't think so. God has blessings in your life that He wants to put out and pour upon you if you will just ask. And here's a dumb old courier for King Herod who was just dumb enough to walk 20 miles and ask. And when he saw the man, he thought to himself, paraphrasing, what in the world have I done? But he still asked. And that's something that we need to get out of this.
Well, a lot of times you don't have to walk the 20 miles, you just ask.
That's exactly right. There is nothing too trivial for our Heavenly Father. The biggest problem we have is that we want to pick and choose. We'll take care of this, and God, you take care of that. Second thing happened when Jesus looked at him and said, unless I give you great signs and wonders, you won't believe. The man had a choice. And sometimes God will give us flippant answers. Because when he said that, the choice the man had was either get hacked off, leave, or he did soul searching, desire of ages, and he said, this request is important to me. And he come right back and said, see, when Jesus said that, he could have just thrown up his hands. If he didn't have belief, if he didn't have sincerity, if he didn't have that perseverance to keep on, that answer would have thrown him off. And so sometimes when we do not get the answers that we immediately think that we should get from God, it's time to do soul searching. And you sit down and you talk to God and you come back. If it's important and you want it and you need it, then you continue to talk to God. If it's not, that delay will throw you off and you'll say, well, I guess it wasn't all that important. And that's why Jesus said to him, unless I give you a sign and wonder, you won't believe. The man had soul searching to do real quick. So the next thing that we learn from this is God does not always give immediate responses to what we ask. Sometimes it's not good for us what we ask for. But even when it is, why? He wants our resolve to be there. And he come back and he said, come with me, urgently, come with me. And when he said, your son lives, Greek is, your son will keep on living. After soul searching, he had enough faith, he accepted it, and that was the end of conversation. I think that was tremendous on his part. Because we always want to come away with something tangible. We always want an answer that we can see immediately. We always want an answer that says, hey, here it is. And he had to walk 20 miles in absolute confidence in God, Christ, that his son lives. And when the servant came out, what a relief. Well, tell me what hour it was. He knew. You're exactly right. He knew. But he wanted to hear it. And what a testimony. I think, John, the answer to your question, we never discussed, belief. Perhaps he believed in the only thing that matters. This was somebody who I would like to know better. You know, it's an interesting thing today when I work that booth. People come up. They would say, look at that book, The Passion of Christ. It's interesting. And I think I've only been around selling for 40 years. I think I'm decently at reading people. You know, had one person say, well, give it to somebody who needs it. Now, how would you interpret that? I've got mine made, you know. See, had a guy, see, the book says E.G. White. Says, well, that's Ellen White. Well, no, obviously, you know, right there, you know something, you know. And said, well, I got some, I know Adventists quite well. I got some in Loma Linda that I know and everything. I said, oh, fantastic, you know, we try to be nice people. And I said, well, you're certainly welcome to a book or and an apple. And he says, well, I have my own church, so I'll take an apple. But in the conversation, it was almost like he was waiting for me to say something about, you need to come to our church. You need to... You see what I'm saying? He'd been around Adventists long enough that he was waiting for me to start some kind of conversation that would lead to, quote, typical Adventist talk. I wasn't there to bring him to an Adventist church. I had news for him. I was there for one reason. Give out free apples and give out a very good book that perhaps would lead somebody to see Jesus Christ. And the nobleman saw that. So what did he believe, John? I don't know. He believed enough that he believed the man would heal his son, and he believed enough that the man must have been somebody special. And sometimes that's the greatest belief any of us can have.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think you go through these things step at a time.
That's right.
And he saw in him, kind of like the thief on the cross.
That's right.
Christ didn't preach, but he watched how he acted.
That's right.
And then he said to himself, you know, if this is the way you run your government, I want to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. Remember me.
That's right. And Jesus will give each one of you the faith and trust and relationship that you can trust Him. Yes, Sandy.
Yeah, something to that. I know at one point he was disappointed and he saw Jesus. But I think there was an authenticity about Christ that came through. That's why these people knew that he was the Son of God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think he had to stand up there and say, I'm
no,
the Son of God.
No, no.
That authenticity comes through I know I can walk into the room of patients that at first are, you know, and we're in our group, and you're, what are you, you know, and that sort of thing. If I have that sense of authenticity, they know it, and after the prayer, I'm like part of their family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's something powerful about that.
Yeah.
To be an authentic Christian is a powerful testimony. Yeah.
See, people are, they think that you're just going to bowl them over with what day do you keep, what do, what do you eat, all of these things. And really, the only thing you have to do is let your life speak. I had a gentleman that was not, his wife was a member of in Broken Arrow, and he was not. And so we went out and played golf every Wednesday. And first, I knew what was going through his mind. And first Wednesday, never said anything. Second Wednesday, just talked, had a good time. Third Wednesday, he finally said, "Well, when are you going to talk about me coming to church?" See? And I said, "Well, whenever you want it." Do you get the point? He thought I was playing golf to get him to come to church. And it was killing him because I wasn't saying anything. See, people think that we're going to mow them down with a bunch of stuff. They're shocked. I had people today. Why are you doing this? Our lives is the witness. Yes, that nobleman saw something in that man. He saw something in that Messiah. It changed his life. People see something in us, we can change their life. But the lesson is, don't be afraid to ask God for to take care of your needs. Father in heaven, we're thankful for this story. We're thankful that you cared enough about a man, that you worked with him, you healed his son. When he went home, he recognized enough to know that you were different. Our prayer is to help us as we're around people that will be different. And if we're asked the right questions, we can point you to our source, your love. This we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you all. Pool of Bethesda. Why would a God stir up water? And the first one of all these handicapped people that get in it be healed. What a game. Man, what a reality show that would make today. John's already shaking his head.
The first person in that water can be healed.
I think John knows me well enough. We might come to a different conclusion. Thank you all. Sabbath school tomorrow, first chapter of Ecclesiastes. Prayer meeting, we had 43 people. Book of Judges was very well covered. This week I get to do what I do best at prayer meeting is present a love story.
Because Rob didn't do it once.
That must have been some providence. I was Sunday evening after we had that story. They had a Yul Brynner and...
Yeah, he's fine.
Did they like Solomon?
Oh,
he's
yeah.
On the way home, and he said, "No, I'm fine."
Had
my
hair
cut,
too.
Oh,
isn't
that?
Cut, and he said, "I got home."
To see how much he'd
paid. That guy do my hair.
At least or whatever. But it was very important. The questions we ask about, you know, how many things happened before he finally just gave up. But he cared for the ladies. Some of them
cared. Yeah.
Very true, so it was hard. But he did build
this,
showed them building this temple
across. Isn't that amazing? You build a temple for God, and then you turn right around, right across, and build a temple for idol. Just unbelievable. Thank you all.